97.1 QMG, the best R&B in old school. Thanks to Joseph Lovell and Saturday morning's edition of Today's Praise. Really do appreciate that, Joseph, and I think we need some morning inspiration given the situation that we're in. And what a transition to say good morning and to welcome everyone to Saturday's edition of Community Focus, our public affairs show. We get the word out. We let you know what's happening in our community. And we're right on time, 6 o'clock on the dot. I'm Renee Vaughn, and I want to say good morning to two members of my Community Focus family. First and foremost, he's an assistant professor of North Carolina A&T State University. I want to welcome Brian C. Sims back. Brian, good morning to you.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good to have you back. Good to have you up and early.
Likewise.
Thank
Always
you.
Good to be up early.
Thank you very much. And, of course, this gentleman, no stranger. He's definitely been a member of our Community Focus family for quite a while. And it's always good to have him back on the program as well, the managing director of Wharton & Gladden LLC, Mr. Algernon Cash. How are you, sir?
Hey there, Renee. How are you?
Doing good. Doing good.
I had to leave Washington real quickly.
You know, we
got all our hearings going on up in Washington about this large bailout package, but I wanted to make sure I was on Community Focus.
And I appreciated your flight got in on time. Absolutely. That's what I'm talking about. Well, thank you very much, Algernon. Thank you very much, Brian. And thank all of you who listen in every Saturday morning at 6 o'clock. We definitely want to hear from you on our topic of discussion. No question, it has been on the minds of many Americans across the country, and that is this recent $700 billion bailout package to try to get our economy back on track. And that really is our focus here for today's edition of Community Focus. So feel free to give us a call here in the studio. We are here for you for the next hour at 336-680-9710. Gentlemen, I think the obvious question, and I'll get the ball rolling, if you will, this morning, what happened? How do you think we got in the situation that we're in with all of the mortgage lending institutions, the main banking institutions? Just yesterday, the largest bank failure in the history with Washington Mutual.
Yeah, yeah.
Or WaMu for short.
Yeah, and one thing I'd say about that is, you know, the FDIC did a great job in the way they handled that. It was they didn't suffer the massive lineups outside of the bank that they did with IndyMac. So, you know, definitely hats off to Sheila Bair at the FDIC and the way they handled the Washington Mutual debacle. What got us here? We would be on Community Focus for the next 6 months probably talking through that.
But that's okay. I don't mind. You know, I think this is going to be a topic of discussion for a while.
And it will be. It will be. I think it was a comprehensive set of problems that caused what we have very complicated problem. You could definitely look back to the easy credit days where the Fed rate was at 1% right after the 2003 recession, and you know, we felt like we really had to stimulate the economy. You could point to some of the products that were engineered because we had sort of entered a time period in society where everyone felt like they should be a homeowner, or homeownership had become sort of a right. So there were some products that were engineered that allowed everyone to become a homeowner. So you could point to that. You could point to the irresponsibility of homeowners. You could point to that. You could point to the irresponsibility of appraisers and mortgage brokers and everyone that sort of participated in the downline of some of those mortgages that were originated that should never have been originated. So, I think right now what you see and what you've seen this past week on Capitol Hill is a tremendous amount of finger pointing. And that's all good and well, but I think now what we really have to do is sort of join together and figure out what do we do to stop the bleeding so that we can get on some kind of road to recovery.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, Algernon, because I think that's what has occurred. And Brian, feel free to jump in on this, but for me, and I think this is just my personal opinion upon things, it feels like we really have kind of separated our relationship, and especially our relationship with our United States government, into where, okay, now we're in a position where we're really looking for the government to kind of do everything for us, as opposed to the way things used to be, where I think in a large respect, perhaps, and I may get a little debate on this, I don't know, where we were kind of passive about what our government did for us. I don't think we were really kind of, you know, keeping that watchful eye, making sure that everybody was supposed to, the system of checks and balances, that people were supposed to do what we put them in office to do.
Sure.
And now we're in a situation where, like you said, everything is just totally messed up. So where do we go from here?
Yeah, Algernon, I think Algernon's exactly right. From the perspective of someone who's not a financial, you know, expert or guru.
Right, and I'm not.
I would never count myself in that boat. But I think you know, part of the two parts of the reason, it's complex, but two parts of the reason I think we're here is, you know, one has to deal with credit dependence. So there's just a general mentality, and perhaps it's tied to Americanism of being able to, you know, to do with stuff that you can't necessarily financially support in the here and now. Right. Right? So Kanye says that I got a problem with spending before I get it.
Yeah.
I think all of us are guilty of that on some level.
I think so,
and
too.
And that's really, I think, sort of coming home at this point. And then the second is, you know, what's interesting to me is sort of, one, Renee, this mentality of, you know, the government's responsibility for stepping in the private sector. That kind of confuses me as sort of a layperson. Like, this, the lines really seem to be blurring more and more. But then also this constant transition between, like, technology and financial services versus real, like, traditional production. I think nowadays there's a lot more, and Algernon, correct me if I'm wrong on this, there's a lot more to our economy that has to deal with people who aren't actually producing something. They're dealing with the products of other folks, whether it be in financial services,
sure,
or in the technology sector. And I think that explosion, we're not really equipped to deal with. I think we're kind of, like, in the lag of that right now, so...
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think he draws out a couple of different points. I mean,
right.
Yeah, we definitely as an economy have transitioned from more of a industrial manufacturing-based economy to what we would label more as a knowledge-based economy, which typically will happen with civilizations as they sort of evolve over time. You can sort of look at the United Kingdom and you can see that, you know, at once they were an industrialized nation.
Right.
But over the last several decades, they've sort of gotten more away from that and gotten more away from production to now they're really more of a knowledge-based economy. In fact, some of the greatest financial centers are actually in London and not in New York, as most people would believe. So, we definitely have moved in that direction. And we definitely have an economy that's based on 2/3 of consumption. So when you have a consumption-based economy, that's typically going to be driven by credit. Mm. Now, I will typically teach my clients that, you know, cash is king and that you need to stay away from credit and try to use cash as much as possible. But credit does have its role, especially when you look at commercial companies that maybe access short-term credit in order to meet their operational expenses. Critical expenses such as payroll.
Right.
A lot of companies go to the short-term credit markets or the money markets to be able to get 30-day funding, and they pay their bills throughout that 30 days, and it's all based on when their revenue comes in, and then they just pay that short-term credit back off. So we've created – he's right. I mean, we've definitely created an economy that sort of revolves around credit. Now, granted, credit, I think, allows you to get some things that you probably shouldn't be able to get, so it does allow us to be irresponsible. But at the same time, I think for companies, credit creates some efficiencies and allows them to produce more goods and services. So,
as a financial advisor, Algernon, do you think that this is finally, so to speak, a wake-up call for us as consumers?
Definitely.
Especially when you talk to your clients and say, you know.
Yeah, definitely. I think anyone that has a TV or a subscription to a newspaper or magazine is definitely going through a wake-up and realizing that you have to be very careful about the amount of leverage and the amount of credit that you take on.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to buy a house, you got to come in with an equity basis. If you're going to buy a car, you should have an equity basis in that car. This is a definite wake-up call, not only to ordinary citizens, but to elected officials, I mean, to private leaders. I think everybody is sort of just at awe at what's happening right now. I read a 14-point letter by John Allison from BB&T in the Winston-Salem Journal this week. So, I mean, everybody has been awakened by what you're seeing in Washington. So,
well, gentlemen, let me share with you. The other day I happened to watch a program in which there was a couple who, pretty much like most Americans, are in that situation where they are just really drowning in their own debt, so to speak. But what really, and I think literally, I almost fell off the couch when I was watching this to hear when the wife actually said that between herself and her husband, they had amassed 29 credit cards.
Yeah.
Now, she didn't go into specifics as to, you know, what types, what they were used for. But that number just blew my mind. I didn't think it was possible for anybody to own 29 credit cards.
Yeah, I mean, you hear these kind of stories, and you get taken aback. I mean, how did you accumulate so many cards?
Right.
But it becomes a shell game where you maybe had two or three cards, and then you start shifting balances to another card to pay off this
card.
Which
is exactly what they were doing.
And before you know it, you've got 20, 30 different credit cards and accounts, and then you're probably in massive debt and in over your head.
Yeah.
you know, average American is carrying some level of credit card balance. I mean, somewhere in the neighborhood of between $4,000 to $6,000 at least on average.
But here was this. That was the first shock. She came back and shocked me yet again when she told me, or when she said rather to the world, so to speak, since she was on national television, that she was living in the home that they're currently in, where the mortgage is about $3,000 a month.
Wow. Did she happen to say how much she made?
No, I don't think they got into that.
Did she have a job?
Yeah.
You know what? I don't know. I'm assuming not. I'm under the impression that the husband probably was the breadwinner, but let's just say to some degree maybe she was.
See, and here's the thing, especially for our community. Yeah. The root of the issue is education, because I would wonder, I would question how many of these folks who are drawn, you know, getting into this sort of debt really have a basic level understanding of what credit is and how it works.
Right.
That's right.
You know, I think to a large degree, whether it's like, you know, they said in the debates last night, whether it's Main Street or even maybe some elements of Wall Street,
right,
folks just don't conceptually understand what it means to take someone's money and then pay for the time that it's going to take you to pay it back.
Exactly.
That's right. Yeah, they don't really understand that. You know, Brian, or the risk that get associated with it.
Exactly. Right. Brian, let me ask for you as a professor, and I'm pretty sure that this has really become a topic, not only of discussion, but it has to be of concern for your students at North Carolina A&T State University, because most of us were at that point that when we are just either starting off as a freshman or we're about to transition as a senior and get out there in the real world, and here we have an economy that's just really perhaps at its worst. I'm pretty sure you got a lot of worried kids over there.
Absolutely. There's a general sort of atmosphere of pessimism, you know, both in terms of students who are in and struggling, you know, with bills, because that's a reality.
Yeah.
And I think for the outlook of those, you know, kids who are in middle school and high school right now, I mean, the prospects of going to college, getting $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 in debt, so that when you start working, you're that far in the hole.
Right.
I think it's starting to make less and less sense to the to the sort of average college student. Now, that's of course without financial aid and scholarships,
right,
and so on and so forth. But the college bill every year it grows.
Yeah.
Every year it grows.
Yeah, it does.
You know, and so when you talk about what's happening to the job market when I get out, what does that do? What does that do to the value of my degree?
Right.
You know, I think a lot of students are starting to look for ways of, you know, generating their, you know, income in, you know, in non-traditional ways that don't necessarily involve the college, you know, the college route.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, that's staggering.
It is.
Yeah, it's kind of scary, but it's the same type of thing we're talking about in the financial, world, like the possibility of total collapse of the system.
Yeah.
I mean, what happens when we get to a day when students don't see college as the avenue to, financial security?
Sure. Yeah.
Exactly. You know? So, Algernon, that's a good transition to ask this question. What could happen if we don't, quote unquote, bail out of the banks, or the banks, we can't bail them out?
You know, I like to refer more to it as a rescue package than
a bailout.
Than a bailout, yeah. Seriously, though, and I'm not trying to shock the triad, and I'm not trying to shock anyone that may be driving down the road this morning,
right.
But yes, I firmly believe that we are at the brink of what I would label an economic winter. And if we do not help some of our financial companies to loosen up the credit system, to add liquidity back to the system, to add confidence back to the system, if those kind of things do not happen, I think that we could start to suffer a massive credit loss. There have already been some reports of small businesses that have actually went out of business. Now, these are not large banks. These are not large financial companies like the Lehman Brothers, who we allowed to fail about a week ago. These are small business owners. These are guys that own little companies in backyards like Greensboro that maybe employ 75 or 100 people. And, because they can't get access to short-term credit in order to fund their operations, they're coming under pressure. So there's already signs of this occurring. If you look at the short-term credit markets, you can see the indexes spreading out very quickly. What that signals is that credit is actually jamming up. That means no banks are lending to each other, which means they're not going to lend to you anymore. I think that we are here at the brink of a massive credit system failure. And it's important that we come in and we do try to help our financial companies.
I'm just curious, Algernon, now that you have brought this up, this has really kind of got my brain working here this morning. Where does like payday lending institutions come into play? We don't have quite as many in North Carolina
They're banned in the state now. Yeah, that's why you saw all of them get shut down. And
so quickly.
And I'm one of, you know, the payday loans is a tough one for me. And the reason why is because I don't think it's a black and white issue. And I've heard a lot of people just say that these guys are predatory lenders and that they should be ran out of business. And I do believe that if you look at the facts and statistics, there's an argument for that. But I also think that there is an argument that within, you know, low-income neighborhoods and low-income areas, there is a need for this short-term type of loan scenario where you go get a payday loan. And even credit unions and banks, small banks, have come out and said that there is a need for it. There is this need for a micro-loan type community.
Right.
But your banks are typically not able to fill the void because from an administrative standpoint, your bank isn't able to process a $200 loan. That, you know, that it's hard for them to from a cost standpoint, what it goes into the administrative costs of doing the loan, managing the paperwork, taking the payments and doing those kind of things. They cannot make that make sense. These payday lenders seems to be able to do that. Now, obviously, the interest rates they charge on this stuff is exorbitant.
Yes,
you know,
very much so.
But very comparable to, you know, I have investors who buy real estate property who will not go to a conventional bank that we take to private investors. Mm-hmm. Now, these private investors charge much more of an interest rate on the loan they're going to give out, but it's also related to how it's underwritten and the risk they're taking on. So, you know, I think that payday lenders, they have a role, maybe not in their current form and the way they look.
Right.
But the concept and the theory of what they're trying to do definitely has a role. And like I said, here in North Carolina, they've been completely ran out of business. So.
Right. So they're not even in existence much anymore. Not at all, to be honest. 336-680-9710. Saturday's edition of Community Focus. I want to thank Algernon Cash and Brian Sims for being with me, Renee Vaughn, in the studio. We're talking about what was that word? A rescue package.
That's right.
I think we're going to substitute that for the remainder of
Wall
the show. Wall Street
rescue
package. I think I like that. So if you have questions, comments, definitely concerns about the situation, feel free to reach to us here in the studio or reach out to us rather here in the studio. The number again, 336-680-9710. Gentlemen, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, Algernon and Brian, I want to address this question and probably the question of a lot of Americans, in particular for those who are listening to Community Focus this morning. The question being, is my money safe in my bank or financial institution? So
that's
we'll
a great question.
Thank you. We'll dwell on that during the commercial break. We'll come back and we'll try to answer it for you right here on the Best R&B and Old School. We are 97.1 QMG. The Best R&B in Old School, 97.1 QMG, and we're giving you some free community information as we're back with Saturday's edition of Community Focus. Again, I want to thank Algernon Cash and Brian Sims being with me, Renee Vaughn, on the program. Again, if you would like to call us in the studio with questions or comments, 680-9710 is the number to call. I think somebody knows we're back from break. So, gentlemen, let's go right to the phone lines. Good morning, and thank you for tuning into the program. How are you, and thank you for your call.
Hey, how are you?
Doing good.
All right, I was just calling. I was listening to the program this morning.
Yes, sir.
By the way, my name is Demetrius Noble, and I just called in with a couple comments and also a question that I wanted to pose as well.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
So my comment is I was listening to the Brother Algernon, I believe it is, talk about the need for the bailout package. And I believe that there is a short-term need for that. But I was watching the debates last night, and I think Obama made a really good point. He says, besides this short-term package that we're planning to roll out, there also needs to be some serious investigation of what got us here in the first place. And I think that, you know, the lack of regulatory measures and just the overall corporate greed and excess has really placed the entire country in the need where, you know, the common working class is going to have to carry the cross, so to speak, of this corporate greed. And that's just the comment. Now, my question that I want to throw out to the panel you have this morning,
yes, sir,
is regarding the prison industrial complex. So if you're talking about the economy and people can't find jobs and things of that nature, I believe that far too often the conception is that people can't find work because a lot of jobs are being shipped overseas. Well, these jobs are being kept domestically, but it's being ran now through a modern-day slavery, which is the prison industrial complex, where private industries are buying prisons, and these brothers and sisters in jail are, you know, making everything from RIMs to your Dell laptop computers for pennies and dollars on a day. And that's what's really draining the economy, and that's why they're investing more in prisons than they are in schools. And no one's talking about this. No one's talking about this. So I just wanted to bring this up as a fair chance for a discourse at the table this morning.
All right. Well, Mr. Noble, thank you for your comment, first of all. Thank you for your question. Mr. Algernon, would you like to rebuttal?
Yeah, I'm actually going to somewhat brush over the question. I don't know much about it myself. I am aware that, you know, obviously, you know, there is a tremendous amount of people that are employed through the prison system, whether it's through productive type labor or even through customer service type operations, where you have prisoners that are obviously working in service centers on behalf of companies. And I am aware of it. I'm not deeply, and you know, I haven't deeply researched the issue, and it's not something that I normally comment on. But I do want to make a comment towards the initial comment that you made, not necessarily his question. I do think that the issue, the financial crises or whatever you want to label it that we're in right now, I do think that it is a very complicated issue, and it was caused by a complicated measure of things, and obviously including relaxed regulation. Yes, you could definitely say that there was some greed that was involved with some of the risky products that were created and all of the loans that were originated. But really, what we're in here, guys, is a perplexing situation. It's almost like if Renee, if your house sets fire tonight, are we going to go ahead and get the fire truck out there and try to put the fire out, mm-hmm. or are we going to go ahead and call the insurance adjuster and try to figure out how it happened and what we can do? At some point along the line, we do need to spend a lot of healthy time figuring out what happened. Where did the controls fail at? Mm-hmm. How can we go back and fix those things?
Right.
How can we make improvements? It's sort of very similar to the Sarbanes-Oxley legislation that came in after the Enron and WorldCom failure. So we do need to do those things. But first, before we can do that, we've got to put the fire out. We got to stop the house from burning. And then we can try to spend some time and figure out how to put those other measures in place.
Mr. Noble, let me ask you this question. Do you know a gentleman by the name of Brian C. Sims?
Yes, I do.
Okay, he happens to be part of the panel this morning. Say good morning to him.
Good morning, Brian.
D, what up, sir?
How are you?
Let me first address the comment and then hopefully try to answer the question. I think the comment is right on point. We have to, I think, if we're going to even begin to think about getting out of this, you know, understand how we got in. So we just need to tell the story honestly. I mean, capitalism is not all good. Capitalism, I don't even think is mostly good. So it's inherently a system predicated upon exploiting the labor of those who can't do anything about it. So you can talk about that in terms of, you know, chattel slavery, the legacy of this country, or you can talk about that in terms of, you know, business owners and wage workers. So from a common sense perspective, it makes sense for, you know, a capitalistic society to try to exploit those who really can't do anything about it. And those are the incarcerated, like you said, brothers and sisters who literally have no say in the matter. I mean, right. I've heard horror stories of, you know, prison inmates being forced, like literally forced to work. So it's not even a, you know, if you want to work, you can make 35 cents today. You can work and make 35 cents today, or I'm taking away some of your, you know, liberties or freedoms. And so
right.
Part of it is, you know what I'm saying, just telling it, you know, like it is. And then to answer your question, I think what we see in terms of the prison privatization. So what used to be strictly a government enterprise now is being outsourced to private companies and corporations all over this country. So that means that some of the prisons, you know what I'm saying, are owned by folks whose end of the day is making money, right? So what you see is that privatization really, I think, parallels sort of the government, the private and public sector blurring that we were talking about during the break, Renee. So it's kind of interesting how we get to a climate where private corporations start to get in trouble, and then the government says, oh, here's, you know, X number of dollars to help you out.
Right.
That really sort of blurs the lines between, you know, what we traditionally think of in terms of private and public sector. You see the exact same thing going on in the prison industry, and it is an industry.
Exactly. Mr. Noble, I appreciate your call this morning, brother.
Not a problem.
Yes, you have a great weekend.
All right.
Thank you, sir. 336-680-9710. I had to pause there because that was good conversation.
And he's right. Yeah. Nobody is talking about it. So it's not surprising that, you know, in general, we don't know a lot about it. It's right. Like you might hear a blip about it here and there, but for the most part, these issues aren't being discussed. We would rather focus on, you know, those of us who are, you know, in free society, and then assume that those of us who are not are out for some reason. They must be criminals. They must be bad. So we don't even really need to talk about them.
Right.
To a large degree, they are bearing the burden of
exactly. And it's
struggle.
Almost as if we're excluding them from the bigger picture as well. 336-680-9710. Gentlemen, let's take another call. Thank you for your patience, and thank you for calling into Community Focus. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Good. Good to hear from you, sir. Thank you. Go right ahead.
Well.
Yes, go ahead with your question.
Well, I was going to ask the gentleman on the panel that don't you think the banking industry need to be narrowed down? I think, for one, I think that people are looking into the name Lehman Brothers, this and this and that has failed. For one, the economy is not what it used to be, and it'll be a while before it ever will. And I think that credit is not an option, because you're not going to go too many places to get credit without a job. And I don't think that we really need a Lehman Brothers or Morgan Stanley and all of the other. We have other industries that can handle that. And the question that I would like to ask the guys is, it's good that we could narrow it down and keep on going, because if you keep spending money into a failing industry, people mortgages are not going to change overnight because you don't have any jobs.
Well, hold on. You know, the financial services industry is not a failing industry, and if it is a failing industry, then we have a problem. Any industrialized country such as America has to have a functioning financial services industry.
Well, instead of failing,
they have to have a functioning credit system.
Right. Instead of failing, can we say maybe it's in a situation where it's kind of let us down?
I think you could rightly say that the financial services industry has maybe not adhere to the greatest ethical standard right now. I think you could say that. But once again, to make a comment and say that we don't need investment banks such as Morgan Stanley, or we don't need investment banks such as Lehman Brothers, or that we just don't need investment banks, I don't think people really understand. And then once again, I understand that everyone's not going to get basic, you know, advanced financial concepts. But we have corporations out here, corporations, companies, and even small business owners who depend on merchant banking, or they depend on the ability to access these banks for short-term credit. You just cannot remove these companies from the market and believe that you still have an economy that functions the way it does. Yes, you could let all these banks fail. You could let all these financial companies fail. But you will see something that is very similar to what we saw 70, 80 years ago during the Great Depression. You will see that over again.
Right.
I don't think you can let them fail.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but my thing is the banking industry. You know, you may have 8 Wachovias on 3 streets, but this is what I'm saying is, shouldn't you pour the money into the small business instead of pouring the money at the top? Start from the bottom up. I mean, that's what America is based on. We start from the top up.
Then we
work our way down. Let's reverse the curse to start from the bottom up. Let's help the small business owner.
We're trying to with this, you know, with this rescue package.
we're trying to.
we
hope that's how it ends up.
We're trying to.
Given the problem, more money, is I don't think we're really helping them, y'all. I really don't.
But I kind of hear this gentleman's frustration, because I think, if anything, when we watch the news and we've been hearing about these institutions falling, shall we say, by the wayside, the thing is, and this is what really got to me, and I don't know about you, sir, was the fact that here you have these banking institutions going under, but yet the CEOs are getting these outrageous bonuses and they're getting all of these monies, and you're thinking, well, what the heck is going on? I mean, instead of this person being removed from that position. It's kind of like, I don't want to say a buyout, but I guess it is what it is.
A golden parachute.
A golden parachute, exactly.
And yes, that once again, there's valid argument that there should not be golden parachutes. There's valid arguments that we should have tighter regulation. There's valid arguments that we need to remove corporate greed from the financial process. These are all valid arguments, yeah. but once again, I cannot stress. I want the caller to understand. I want the listeners to understand. We have reached an economic cliff, and we have to do something right now. We have to make a move right now. After we make this move, then we need to focus on corporate governance. We need to focus on executive compensation. We need to focus on regulation. We need to focus on these things and make sure that they're put in place. But I'm telling you, and anyone that's watching the markets, if you look at the credit markets, you look at the equity markets, you look at the fixed income markets, we are at the brink of an economic winter. We have to make a move right now.
Yeah. Well, caller, I thank you for your call. Unfortunately, I want to get to some. I have to let you go because I want to try to get to some more callers this morning. But I appreciate your input and thank you for calling us here in the studio.
All right, thank you.
You're very welcome.
And I want to address one other point the caller brought up about the consolidation in the banking market. He sort of advocated or said, you know, we could allow this consolidation to occur. I don't think you want to see a world where J.P. Morgan Chase owns everybody's deposits. Or I don't think you want to see a world where Wells Fargo owns everybody's deposits. Mm-hmm. Or a world where Bank of America owns everybody's deposits. I don't think you want to create a United States like that.
Right.
But if we continue to sit by the sideline, that's what's happening right now.
Yeah.
Bank of America is buying up everybody that's in trouble. J.P. Morgan Chase is buying up everybody in trouble. Believe it or not, the free market system is working. Mm. It's working. Mm. Because these larger banks that are healthier are going out and taking over the banks that are sick. But we cannot allow consolidation to occur at that level where you have an over-concentration of American deposits in just one financial institution, where you're just going to let one group of guys run the entire United States banking system. We cannot allow that to happen.
And I think that revolves back to my question that I asked before we went to break earlier. Is folks' money safe in their banks and financial institutions, Algernon?
I'm going to let Brian take a swing at that
okay,
one first.
Okay, sure,
man.
Brian. Anybody who wants to pitch in.
I'm going to let him take a swing at it.
I'm going to take the psychological approach and say it depends on how you define safe.
Okay.
So,
good point.
You know, if we were to use sort of a psychological metaphor, I might describe it sort of as a person who's addicted to some psychoactive drug, right? So
right.
That drug has a certain effect on their body. And if they like the effect, then they need the drug. But once they stop taking the drug, then their effect's going to start to wear off. If they want that effect, what do they have to do? They need more of the drug. That's the situation we're in right now. So we're addicted to credit and the lifestyles that it affords.
That's
but
right.
It's not a natural state, right?
Right. So once
we start having problems with the drug, which bodies naturally tend to do.
Right. We go through these stages of withdrawal. Exactly.
That's what we're in. And yeah. So this.
I agree with them, actually.
The seeming solution is what? Give me more of that drug.
Right. Yeah.
Right?
I agree with you.
So
I agree with you.
I don't know. I think.
And a first here on Community Focus, ladies and gentlemen.
That might be the first, yeah.
I work in investment banking. But I've always advocated from a personal standpoint that cash is king. I believe that debt and credit is very dangerous.
Right.
I believe we live in a country that's addicted to debt. Mm-hmm. And we were going through a party almost where debt and believe it or not, when Bush said that America is like an alcoholic, he was right.
Right.
He was right when he said that. We were drunk on credit, and we remain drunk on credit,
and we
continue to need another drink in order to keep
exactly,
us going.
Exactly.
Good point.
But you know, to your point, is the money safe in the banks? Obviously, from a technical standpoint, we do have an FDIC that insures your money up to $100,000.
Right.
So that is a way for your money to be protected. There are a lot of small business owners that have more money than $100,000 in their accounts. We do have a program called CDARS, which means Certificate Deposit of Account Registry. It's a program that small business owners can get into in order to make sure their deposits are safe inside of the bank. The FDIC, and I mentioned Sheila Bair earlier, who's the head of the FDIC, they've done a terrific job at trying to steer through some of these bank closures. In the early 30s when we were going through the Depression, I think we saw somewhere around 2,000 bank failures. Right now, we've really only seen around 13.
Yeah.
So I don't think the problem has deepened and gotten as worse as what we went through back then. Also, during the Depression, we didn't have any kind of deposit guarantees. None of that was in place. We had no kind of guarantees on your investment accounts. Those kind of things are in place now. Yeah. The Federal Reserve has just recently stepped up and said that they would guarantee the money market. So if you have your money in money market type funds, those things should be protected. So yes, your money is protected, but still at the end of the day, when you watch TV and you see stock prices at Wachovia and some of these other banks under pressure,
right.
And what happened at Washington Mutual is for the last 2 weeks, people saw their stock price come under pressure, and everybody started going to the bank saying, I want my money.
Money, right.
And they experienced a high run on the bank, mm-hmm. and the FDIC had to take them over. If the FDIC wouldn't have taken them over the way they did, Washington Mutual could have sunk the FDIC fund because mm-hmm. there were so many depositors they would have had to pay off. So really what we have to do right now, and mm-hmm. I know this is hard for some of us, we're going to have to be patient and calm. We cannot run to the bank.
Yeah, I think
we cannot make runs to the
bank.
I
think
mean, that's what we have to do.
I think
and patience, that's hard for people.
That's
right
true.
Now.
I was going to say, I think patience is one of those type of words where it's a little harder in practice as opposed to theory.
Mm. My grandfather called me and asked me. He said, you know, should I go take my money out the bank and,
right.
and
you
bring
him?
Home? Yeah. And, you know, I told him to leave it there. For right now. I mean, to leave it there because once again, we do have to be careful about inciting a panic.
Exactly. That's the last thing we want to see.
We just want to make sure we don't want to do
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Gentlemen, let's take another quick break, and then I'm going to try to get as many calls within the next 15 minutes as I possibly can. Folks, be patient with us. We're going to get to your calls.
Don't panic.
Don't panic at all. Excellent.
Don't panic.
Algernon Cash, Brian Sims joins me, Renee Vaughn, as more of Saturday's edition of Community Focus will continue on the best R&B and old school, 97.1 QMJ. And thank you for finding us on your radio dial, 97.1 QMG, the best R&B in old school. We're back with Saturday's edition of Community Focus. I'm Renee Vaughn, and I want to thank again Brian Sims, Associate Professor of North Carolina A&T State University, the Department of Psychology, and Algernon Cash, representing Wharton Gladden LLC. Our topic of discussion, we officially renamed it, I believe, at the earlier portions of the show, Algernon, and that is our Wall Street
rescue package.
That's right.
Rescue
and recovery package. Yep. But something that we were touching on, and I was just going to say, gentlemen, I think our conversations off air are just as intriguing as they are with our listeners on air. And I wanted to touch back with you, Brian. We were mentioning and talking about earlier whether or not our money is safe. And I thought you made a valid point by saying, well, what is that true definition of safe?
Right.
I think we have to establish that definition before we can determine from there what we need to do.
Absolutely. It definitely goes back to our understanding of what money is and how it can work for us.
Yes.
So, you know, if the question is somebody going to swoop in and take the money that's in my account, you know, that might be one definition of safe.
Right.
Another one is just understanding what money is and how it can work for you. So even if you've got money that's under the federally insured limit, it might not be safe, and from the perspective of it's not doing for you what it could be.
Right.
And based on the opportunity cost of, you know, if your money's not earning what it should be or what it could be earning for you, then technically speaking, you're losing money right there.
And I think that's where we as consumers sort of need to do, well, not sort of, I think we need to get to the point, we got to start doing our homework
exactly,
on this.
Exactly.
And checking on their institutions and find out if they really are, like you said, Brian, is our money really working for us? And if not, we got to get on the ball and do something about it.
Right.
We do. I think earlier we were sort of talking about going back to this model of, or it seemed like with the rescue package, we might be going back to a model of the government doing everything for us. Unfortunately, you know, I think realistically speaking, a lot of people are actually used to the government doing a lot for them.
Yeah.
Social Security and those kind of programs, those are programs that have removed the need for you to understand investments. Those kind of programs have removed the need for you to understand how money works, because the government is going to invest your money for you. Then they're going to give you a magical check at the end of the year. I mean, you know, for the rest of your life. So, you know, we've already been in sort of this mindset that our government should be out here doing everything for us. I'm with Brian. I mean, if you don't understand how money works, I mean, you are at a disadvantage.
Yep.
I mean, you definitely need to understand how to make your money work for you.
Right.
So many people want to invest in companies. A lot of times I tell people, invest in yourself. Try to figure out what your talent is, figure out what your skill is, and invest in your own company.
Good point.
So, yeah, I mean, I would advocate anyone listening. And honestly, what's happening in Washington should be a signal to everyone. Go get educated about how money works.
Exactly. Exactly. Let's try to squeeze in a couple of calls because we're getting so close, unfortunately. Sometimes that hour just goes by too fast.
It doesn't
do
us
justice.
Time here.
I know. We got to work on that. Good Saturday morning, and thank you for calling into Community Focus. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
Good, good. Go ahead with your question or comment. We'd love to hear from you.
Yes, actually just a comment based on some of the conversation that y'all been having.
Yes, sir.
And I find it extremely interesting. I actually work in the financial industry as well, and I heard some of the comments that people saying, like, we just need to get rid of the investment banks altogether and consolidate. And then just from my general conversation with some folks that I know, and I think what this represents, just to the point Algernon was just making about people in Houston government, you know, handling their money. Mm-hmm. And I think what that signifies, too, is a more important conversation of who's been marginalized from the process. So it's not that people want the government to invest, but or the ignorance comes from, we can just get rid of it altogether, because I've never been incorporated in it. I've never seen how it actually directly benefits me. I know early in the conversation he was saying, well, I don't think it has anything to do with race. But I think it has everything to do with race. We talk about how people have been systematically marginalized from a process, and that's why they can't understand, well, why would we give them $700 billion? They never gave me anything. This thing never helped me in the first place. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about a systematic process that is specifically engineered certain demographics out of this whole thing, and so I think that's an interesting conversation we need to be having.
Yeah, and he makes a decent point,
I
especially
agree.
At the end of the hour here. But you're right. I mean, I think that a lot of people, and the frustration that I sense from a lot of people that I talk to, mm-hmm. they don't believe that we should save these companies, because they don't even quite understand what these companies completely do.
Do right.
So how can you believe that we should save companies if you don't completely understand what they do?
Yeah. Caller.
I think Brian wants to.
Right, sure, sure. Yeah. Caller, I just want to thank you for your comment this morning.
No, again, right on point. Algernon, you mentioned that the notion that folks have grown really accustomed to government doing for them.
Sure.
And then you mentioned Social Security. I thought you were going to mention welfare. So that's one thing that's completely
absent. Well, it's all
discussion. So if you look at the end of the Reagan administration, before we get into the Clinton era, this was like the biggest buzzword: welfare reform. Like, how is the government impacting folks? And we all know the statistics, in terms of welfare. But I think that to the caller's point is a great poignant example of marginalization and how the system differentially impacts, people from different communities.
Absolutely. Caller, thank you so much for your input. We appreciate you this morning.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
And the other thing, for those people that are out there listening that are concerned about the government sort of intervening and becoming a largely part of our life,
right.
That horse is already out the barn, folks. That horse is out the barn.
Yeah.
Right now, with the government taking over AIG, mm-hmm. Fannie Mae, Freddie
mm-hmm.
Mac,
right.
Backing up Bear Stearns, mm-hmm. with the government making the moves that they've made over the last 9 months, they now control 80% of the mortgage market. 80% of the mortgage market is controlled by the federal government. If we're sitting out there wondering whether or not we should help these financial companies because we're afraid of more government intervention,
right.
That horse is out the barn.
Yeah. So. I think this will be a good stopping point. And like I said, God, gentlemen, will you please come back, because we're going to have parts 2, 3, and so on and so forth of this conversation. But especially in light of last night's debate between Barack Obama and John McCain, how does the turmoil in the markets impact the incoming president?
Oh, tremendously. that's a whole nother show.
Right,
tremendously. And I don't care if you're Republican or you're Democrat or Libertarian, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter. I don't care if you support McCain or if you support Obama. Any promises that you have heard up to this point are out the window. Anything that you've heard in regards to universal health care, energy reform, tax cuts for wealthy, tax cuts for middle class, tax cut for low class, tax cuts for your grandmother, tax cuts for anyone.
Right.
All that's out the window. And I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat. I think this financial crisis will make it extremely difficult for the incoming president to be able to manage the economy, because there have been some very large holes blown into the budget. We were running at a $483 billion budget deficit already this year.
Right.
Now we're talking about issuing treasuries for another $700 billion, which would mean we would run at a deficit of over $1 trillion this year. We already have a national debt level that's at $9 trillion. We just inherited $5 trillion from the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac government bailout. So, yeah, in any programs, any of those things, I think it's going to make it very difficult for the incoming president to manage the budget.
Brian, let me address this to you as a professor, and especially with your students, and really for any student who may be listening this morning, in particular for you and your students over at North Carolina A&T State University. What what do you tell them? What kind of hope or perspective do you give to them? And secondly, and I'm this is a question, and maybe a little bit on the humorous side. You think there'll be an increase in the number of students who enroll in business classes after this?
I hope so, too.
I may need to go back and enroll in a couple myself.
Yeah, I would hope so. And if not enrolling in the business classes, taking steps on their own to just, right. like we said before, you know what I'm saying, find out what's going on
exactly.
with your money, with
exactly.
other people's money, so that you're not just, you know, a pawn in the system. Because, you know, my answer to the earlier point about what the presidents,
right.
you know, are going to do is, honestly, I'm just a little scared. When I hear all of this talk on the radio and on TV, it seems to me like people aren't telling me something.
Yeah.
And so I generally have
like we're telling you the truth over here, Brian. Yeah.
That's right. If nobody else
97
does,
is telling you
we
the
will.
Truth.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thank you for that. Thank you for that.
I tend to say, you know, if what they're telling you is scary, then what they're not telling you is terrifying. It's,
exactly.
You know what I'm saying? So what are
exactly.
they not telling?
But, gentlemen, let me just say, thanks to both of you for this opportunity.
Thank
it's
you. Thank
you're
you.
Welcome. Yeah, yeah. Always a good show with all of my guests, but Algernon, you and Brian in particular, we get such a good feedback. We get good response. We get good people to call in. I just really and we could stretch that hour.
Just want to let the triad know, as always, you can always reach out to me at AlgernonCash@BellSouth.net. So if you have questions about the economy, you have
exactly.
questions that you want me to bring up on the air,
right.
Shoot me an email at AlgernonCash@BellSouth.net.
Right.
And the number, if you want to reach out to me, is 478-2305.
Right.
You can give me a call during the day, Monday through Friday.
Thank you very much for that. And I think this would be a great conversation that could carry over when you're on the air with Buster. So
we've been talking about this. You know, every Tuesday we do Cash Money Tuesday
right.
on Buster Show, and that starts at 3:00. So we've been talking about this for the last 2 weeks. I imagine
yeah.
that we're going to be on it for
okay.
the next couple of weeks at least.
Yeah. So for those who weren't able to get through to us today, and we apologize, like we said, that the hour just goes by so quickly.
And we'll
that,
do this again next.
Oh,
month.
Absolutely.
I mean,
yeah. Something
Brian
that we're going to do on the
in.
Regular.
Shout out to the informed callers this morning as well.
Absolutely.
That's encouraging to hear people know what's going
that's
on.
That's right.
They do.
And I appreciate them for calling in and listening too, if nothing else. Even if we don't hear from you, just the fact that you're listening and you're taking in all this information and sharing it with others, that's really what I would hope to see accomplished as the goal of this program. And to thank each and every one of you for your listenership this morning. Brian Algernon, we're going to do this again.
Yes, we will.
I promise you.
We will.
Thank you very much for your time. Thank you again for listening. A busy weekend, folks, especially speaking of Barack Obama. We have a very big rally taking place in downtown Greensboro. The depot, actually, downtown Greensboro, is where the Barack Obama, and actually Joe Biden should be here as well. So
yep.
we're talking the presidential candidate and VP candidate will be in town. So downtown Greensboro is going to get pretty busy between now and 10:00. And, of course, if everything really is going to get underway around 12:15 this afternoon. So, folks, if you're on your way to the area, be safe. Expect it to be busy. Whatever weekend plans you have, be safe. And thank you for incorporating within those plans the best R&B and old school. On the way is the Old School Weekend Show that brings those memories right back at you. It's best known as the Tom Joyner Morning Show at its best. And it's coming up in minutes. Have a great weekend. And as we say, we'll talk to you on the radio real soon. Renee Vaughn, Brian Sims, Algernon Cash, we say thank you for your listenership and do keep it here to the best R&B and old school 97.1 QMG.